You can't be serious, so man. You cannot be serious!
Where else do you want to get to as far as distribution? Because when I first saw you, I was doing dirty in my head, off of me, my head.
Ooh, and it's all right, and it's coming. Oh, we gotta get right back to where we started from. Love is good.
We're on air. Thank you.
Now, before I introduce our guest, who Don said I never mentioned, but I've just proven off air that I did mention it because he said to me, what sort of business is that? And I told him exactly. He said, oh, that'll be interesting. So the man, and he said, Don also said that he hadn't rung me this week. I've just shown the doc, Dr. James Stewart, on one phone, because I have two, he's rung me 12 times, and the other one, I haven't checked the other one, that's since Sunday, so he said he'd never heard from me, or I hadn't heard from him. Now, Kate Save is just here for briefly, because the only thing I asked Don to say what is new with the Kate Save is the only thing he didn't mention. So tell me what you've got here, Kate, and you're going to have to use that microphone, so tell me what it is that you've got in your hand there.
So I've got the MyDNA kit. So these are for anyone who wants to understand what their fitness genes are, what their weight regain genes are, if they have the obesity gene, how they process caffeine, their sleep genes, because I guess understanding all of those things about yourself can help you make better decisions. And you can understand then when you eat cake and someone else eats cake, where someone gains weight and someone else doesn't. And that does come down to our genetics to a certain extent.
So this pack, it looks like a COVID test pack.
It does,
so
actually.
So where do you get it? What do you do with it? You ask for it.
Yep. So we've got it in our head office in Mornington, or we've got them online at beefitfood.com.au. And I did mention to Don as well, anybody who comes into our Mornington store up until the end of Feb, we've done a huge production of the dark choc hazelnut protein balls and the dim sims that Don always talks about. We will give you a free packet of the protein balls or the dark choc hazelnut, the dim sims.
They're good.
Because every time you come in, we get more customers coming in the store
I'd give away a lot.
Yeah,
leader.
Not a business, Don.
No, the dim sims are magic.
The only thing I asked you to mention is she got anything new was this that she's doing now, and you didn't mention it. So we're interrupting the time taken to speak to the person you said I didn't say was coming in, but I proved that you did. And I've shown the doc 12 phone calls you made to me since Sunday. Kate?
Yes. So with the DNA testing, so you spit into a little tube, you literally just pop it in the letterbox. It's got a reply paid envelope or a post box, it is. And then all of a sudden on the app, your results
pop up. Because I'm sharing the microphone, that's why. You fool of a man. What do you think I'm... Don thinks I'm about to kiss you. We're sitting about 2 inches apart, our heads. Because I'm using the microphone she's speaking on, you idiot.
At least we've both had coffee, so if our breath stinks, it's just coffee.
Well, that wouldn't stop it.
Is that it, Kate?
That is it. So use the code BeFitBalls to get a free packet of protein balls or dark choc hazelnut protein balls or dim sims. You guys are very distracting this morning.
Seriously, I'm sitting here about seriously 3 inches away from you and your lips, because we're using the same microphone, and he said, oh, you're getting a bit... He didn't see the microphone, because as I say, someone asked him to count to 1 to 3 yesterday and he got 2 of the numbers wrong. So that's how well he's travelling.
So we'll do your DNA test and we'll tell you whether you have the... what your fitness genes are. How about that?
All right, Kate. If we did this for much longer, I would end up kissing you. But that wouldn't go over well because you're married and betrothed. And
well, that hasn't stopped you in the past.
No, but it would stop me now, Don.
No, I think something else would stop you.
All right.
Thank you very much for having me.
Right. See you guys.
Good girl. Thank you. Oh, good girl. Good girl, I said. I shouldn't have said that. Well, good girl. You're a girl.
That's kind.
I hope you're a girl. Now, Don. Now, this man I've known for a long time. I've known him professionally, really, because he used to assign a squad of people, and he used to come and accompany us when we used to do street talk on Channel 9 on the footy show. Because, believe it or not, people did some incredibly stupid things on street talk.
Well, he's built like a brick shithouse.
Used to do some incredibly stupid things on street talk, not that people would see on camera, but people who desperately wanted
I thought you handled yourself well on that. So someone else was behind you
And here I am giving, geez, I thought you were a man of the people, the way you used to speak to those people on street talk, the way you controlled them. They're amazing. But you had someone behind you propping you up.
People desperately wanted to get on street talk and would do anything to get on street talk, like throwing things at us or driving things at us or rushing us because they just wanted to be on camera. And the team that Channel 9, the footy show, assigned to do security for us was the man's company I'm about to introduce. I did all the street talk stuff, had nothing to do with that. He kept, and his crew kept, the numbskulls away who would try and get on, not by trying to be injure me or do anything, but just trying to get their head on, thinking that if they did something, they'd get their head on television. That's why they'd accompany us, and they kept out of sight in the main until someone lit a barbecue out at the Anzac Day game out, and this is when barbecues were stopped. They lit a gas barbecue which exploded, and the man I'm about to introduce threw me to the ground, thought it was a bomb and that someone was actually trying to assassinate me, and I'm lying under this man who you said is on steroids, but he's not, and I could hardly breathe. He's the man that nearly killed me. The bomb didn't nearly kill me, and it turned out to be a gas stove, and they stopped having gas stoves, barbecues outside.
Because of you.
Well, because of that, because we put it on the...
Was this in Adelaide?
This was at the MCG.
Well, they used to have barbecues or lunch.
Oh, well, they used to have barbecues everywhere.
So you've just ruined...
Ruined? What do you think of gas barbecue exploding in amongst all the cars?
People enjoying themselves as the day out.
Don't worry about me. It's the people who are standing next to the gas barbecue that exploded. Don't worry about me. How about all the other people who are standing around? So anyhow, Don, I'm about to introduce a man who is the founder of the security company called Monjon. And it was founded in, I think, 1996, so the blurb says. And you might wonder why it's called Monjon. I'll see if you can work out why it's called Monjon when I tell you who his name is. He's a security industry specialist. He's an ex-policeman. They train in-house training for to perfect the people who they sign up to go and do security for them. It's leading-edge technology. They have national and multinational, international clients who that they look after. And the reason predominantly I got him on is because we've noticed two breaches of security that people say, oh, that shouldn't have happened, and where was the security? I don't think his company was involved in either of them. But one, you'll remember the Melbourne City, Victory. Fracas when people invaded the pitch. They said, where's the security? That's one. And two, when our dear old friend, who's, I can say old because he's turning 80 on Sunday, Molly Meldrum, wandered onto the stage of the Elton John concert, and someone said, well, how did he do that? He actually wasn't invited on. I think Elton was delighted he came on, apparently. But someone said, how can he just wander up there? Where's the security there? So those two breaches, and we've got him on, and he's a star, and he's a friend of mine. And his name, the company's called Monjon, and he's called John Moncrief. How do you reckon Monjon got its name? Oh, no, please, don't tell me you're going to think. His name's John Moncrief. How do you think the name Monjon came about?
Well, I'm more interested in the name Moncrief,
Don,
because there was Gladys Moncrief. I wondered whether he's related to Gladys Moncrief. And there was also the Michael Moncrief at Hawthorne. So it's a very famous name, Moncrief.
Well, if you could just answer
Moncrief.
If you could just answer my question. His name's John Moncrief. How do you think they got the name? How do you think he came up with the name Monjon? Holy shit.
He's very creative. Oh, that's all.
Yes, that's Moncrief for M-O-N and John for John, Monjon. So they've just turned the name around. It's like you calling you Skodon. So, John, welcome to You Cannot Be Serious.
Thank you very
much.
Did I
get any of that ham-fisted introduction correct?
There was a bit of GST and a bit of gravy on it, but
was
it was
there?
All okay. It was
okay.
All
well,
fabulous. Very good.
Just as
and
a matter
glad to be here to both of you. Good to see you both.
Are you on steroids?
No, I'm not.
Shit, you're a big man.
Please, this is not a debate, mate. This is we just are genuinely interested in how your business and your firm works. And just tell us about those. What was your impression of those two incidents? About I don't think you were assigned to do the security at the Victory City game, and you probably weren't assigned to look after that. That the handlers of Elton John would probably be. Just when something like that happens, and you are in charge of the security, what is the blowback that you receive?
I suppose I'll go back to where the current security industry is at the moment, and there's more than enough reporting going on in print media, digital media, in relation to security and how major events are being compromised with the lack of security numbers that are available. So to give you an understanding, if we go back to COVID, COVID, when you had an asset such as the National Gallery of Victoria, where you might have 230 staff or 240 staff looking after all of the paintings and the exhibits in the National Gallery of Victoria. When that shuts down, you only need maybe 10, 20 staff on a 24-hour roster to secure a complete building that's been locked up.
You're saying you had 240...
I don't have that contract. I'm just giving you an example.
Oh, yes.
So to give you an understanding. So therefore, what happens to the other 220 security staff that are no longer required, effectively made redundant? So those security staff, especially in Victoria, over the period of the 2 to 3 years of continual lockdowns, go and find employment somewhere else, whether it be in a warehouse, whether it be hospitality, whether it be driving an Uber, whatever the case may be. And they're trying to find employment. The same with the Melbourne Museum, the same with the airports. So you need to renew your licence every 2 years in the state of Victoria. So a lot of the...
To whom?
To the
police.
The regulator, which is the Victoria Police. So what I'm getting to is that over the period of the 2 to 3 years, the security industry across the eastern seaboard have lost close to 15 to 20,000 personnel that haven't renewed their licences. Then all of a sudden we come back out of lockdown and you've got new staff that are only freshly trained, you've got old staff that are trying to renew their licences, and then you've got a public service and a police force, whether it be New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland, that haven't got all of their staff back either. So there's a 4 to 5 month lag of trying to get your licence back. So then fast forward to we open back up and we've got new events, Molly at Elton John. And that's a separate issue, Molly at Elton
John.
Yeah,
no, it is.
I'll have a comment of that. But in relation to the Melbourne Victory situation, I was heavily involved with Melbourne Victory when they first started, and we identified a supporter group that we knew that were recalcitrant. We knew that they were going to cause problems, and we screened them and we knew of what they were trying to do at Bob Jones Stadium when they first started Melbourne Victory. And they were pushing the flares through the cyclone mesh fence. So we'd screen them at the gate. We'd know that they had nothing in their bags, nothing on their persons. But then we watched them go back near the cyclone mesh fence and they pass the flares through the fence. Now, I can't fault, nor would I comment, on what happened at Amy Stadium because I wasn't there and I wasn't part of the operating procedures, I wasn't part of the order. What I would know is that if someone wants to do something, they're going to do it. And I believe that there was a premeditated attitude in relation to a supporter group that were wanting to...
Cause trouble.
So it doesn't matter how many police you've got or how many security you've got. Sure, the more that you've got, the better that you'd be equipped to cope with the issue. But when you've got a mass or a force like what I can see in the footage and the vision of what was going there... Would have Mon John been able to do any better? I don't think so.
So you said that you were a support group for Melbourne City or Victory?
No,
or Victory.
It's a support group.
So why aren't you retained to, or wasn't it their home game or
no,
whatever?
No, Melbourne Victory play their games at Amy Stadium. Amy Stadium has a contract through Melbourne and Olympic Parks Trust with another security company, and that's what their contract is. Now, the security companies of Australia and Victoria and New South Wales, we're all screaming for staff. You know, I saw a WhatsApp text to my CEO for the Falls Festival. Now, you two men are learned men, and you'd have experience as far as economy and economies of scale. $65 for a security guard per hour to go to the Falls. That's what was being offered to go and work at Falls. Now, that's an enormous amount of money per hour. That's $650 for the day. Now, we can't find staff even at that rate to go down to the Falls Festival.
So can I just get off the subject here just a bit?
Sure.
You're in business, you're looking for staff. You're not Robinson Crusoe.
No.
And I come across it all the time at the moment. Where are all these workers? Have you got any idea? Because I asked the same question to other people.
My knowledge and my feel, Don, is that a lot of the subcontinent staff that work in hospitality...
What did you call them?
Subcontinent staff from India and Pakistan.
Oh.
In the lockdown, they went home.
Oh.
And they haven't come back yet. So if we look at a federal level and we look at a state level, immigration is a massive issue. Whether it be for a Labor government or a Liberal government, it's a massive issue across all of our width and breadth of the economy.
So, yep.
So you're putting it down to the fact that we had a lot of immigrants working in these various
Correct.
Industries.
Yep.
Now the flow-on effect is
Correct.
That we've got... So
yep.
we're yeah,
Very
okay.
much so. Very, very much so.
So... people say security and naturally, you mightn't, Don, but people would normally think of big, large men standing on the door of nightclubs and not letting people in and bouncing people out. But security is not necessarily that, is it?
It's far from it.
So what does it encompass now then, John?
When you look at licensed premises security, responsible service of alcohol... You know, please, you know, don't quote me. I'm obviously on a podcast with you, but
hang on. You're on. Don't say anything that you're going to regret because we don't edit anything.
Correct. So I would think, you know, the licensed security. When you look at the overall size of the security industry, probably 1-2%. You know, when you've just got to look at the garrison contract for the Australian Defence Force. Every Army base, Air Force base, Navy base, and Department of Defence building, ASIO building, Australian Signals Directorate, that's a security contract of multi-hundreds of millions of
dollars. Why wouldn't
they
have their own people doing the security? The Army?
They have it outsourced.
Why?
Because they want troops on the ground. Now, the Army themselves, just like the Victoria Police, and we saw on 3AW and on all of the print media in recent times, that you know, Shane Patton has come back on with Neil Mitchell to say that they're going back out to 40,000 applicants of the Victoria Police to try and see how many they can get back in to reapply because there's such a shortage in the Victoria Police Force.
So what legal entitlement do security men and women, security people have when they can stop you doing things or entering a place or trespassing? What legal entitlement of force or... what legal entitlement
no
do they have?
No more than you. So under 458 of the Crimes Act, if they see an offence committing, they're exactly the same as Sam Newman.
Okay, so what is the point? What is the point of having people dressed up in security uniforms when they have no entitlement to stop you doing anything you want? I presume you can't carry a gun. I presume you... can you have a radio or are you two-way that you can speak to the police on or summons support or how?
So when I look at, your guests that are in the room, yourselves, where you are most likely to come across, and the rank and file member of the public is likely to come across security, is in a shopping centre. So, you know, the shopping centres want to have...
And they're asked to do nothing. I've seen people walk out with goods they haven't paid for and the security can't stop them.
They can't... Well, that then comes back down to that tenant and the policies of that tenant. You know, whatever that company is and whatever their policies are in relation to it, because they may have a marketing strategy that they don't want anything going out on social media or print. They don't want to bring any adverse action towards them.
So you mean to say, hang on.
Yep.
So you're talking... So somebody steals, like you're talking about a shop, someone steals a suit out of the shop, waltzes down,
yep.
the shop assistant goes, oh, I can't apprehend, I can't do it. And the bloke just keeps walking with the suit.
If that is the if that is the instruction from that tenant and that company, that is the case.
So if it's not the instruction of the tenant, if you're there to police... If you're there to police, if the company, the shop says, if you see someone stealing, I want you to apprehend them and we'll take them to the law. Yes. Are they allowed to physically stand in their way or apprehend them?
Once the person has left the confines of that building or that shop and there is an intent to steal and the intent is proven by them not going back into the store or they haven't left the store, yes, then a security guard...
Once they're outside or while they're inside.
Once they're outside. Then the security guard or Sam Newman or Don Scott, under 458 of the Crimes Act, which is a citizen's arrest, can make an arrest.
So that happened. The reason I ask you that, because this exactly happened to a friend of mine yesterday's shop in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Guy came in, took the suit off, you know, it was up near the front of it, took the suit. Went off, chased down by the, you know, security guard. By the...
Store people.
Store person.
Yep, sure.
He said, what are you going to do about it?
Yep.
I can't do it. And you just continue walking with the suit.
Yep.
He wasn't apprehended.
Having said that, I don't understand why they couldn't do it. If they were instructed and they wanted to retrieve that suit or charge that person, and that person, that offender, had left the confines of the store and the intent was there that they were not coming back, they were not going just taking it out to look at it in the sun.
No.
They were going
to take it. So, John, we get into a whole different area then of assault.
Assault, litigation, or
holding people against their will. They will in turn charge the security people. Yep. So that's the knife edge that you can be signed up at $65 an hour to police things or be security, but you have no... any more rights than anyone else who can make a citizen's arrest. What is the point of it unless the law changes?
Well, the point of it is that, you know, if you want to maintain a safe workplace for your staff and you have an environment that has a risk of theft or a risk of assault, then there's an obligation for you to supply a safe place that is free of safe place of work that is free of risk. So therefore, you then go and employ security companies to try and aid and assist in maintaining that workplace that is safe and free of risk.
Is there a problem with regard to the police? The security thing is a modernism. It wasn't around years ago. Is it the fact that they're trying to reduce the size of the police force? Consequently, there's an area for people such as yourself, for security companies now, whereas once upon a time this was done by the police?
Far be it for me to comment on the Victoria Police as an ex-member, and my father was an ex-member as well, and the political environment surrounding police forces around Australia at the moment and around the world. I'll probably put it back to you, Don. When you were playing football, there was a standard and a size and an attitude of resilience that you maintained over your 320 games. Has that same attitude, style, makeup of a footballer been maintained?
Oh, that's an I can't see your point.
My comment to you, how many Don Scotts and how many Sam Newmans are playing AFL football now?
Oh, I think there's quite a few.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that, John?
I don't know what you... Yeah.
You won't offend us, so...
No, I'm not offending you.
Well, you won't anyhow, whatever.
If I look at the coaching style of a Dennis Pagan, a coaching style of an Alan Jeans, would their coaching style... Would they be appointed nowadays in the modern era?
No, they wouldn't.
There you go. That's my point.
There's no way. So
you're saying society's changed.
Correct.
Okay, but...
The way we played, we wouldn't spend more time on the sidelines than actually playing.
There's a standard that has dropped across the board, I would think. In
society?
In society, yes.
So hence the police used to go out and take the big cosh to people who were annoying back in the 40s and 50s, and now all that's completely changed now, and the strength and the authority that the police have it on a monthly basis is dissipating.
I would think that the word that we're looking for across the width and breadth of society, and you look at the circumstances that are presenting in Alice Springs at the moment.
It's not only Alice Springs.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
You know, I raised our sons on the three R's: respect yourself, respect others, and be responsible for your actions. My father raised me that life's tough. Once you get used to that, life gets easier. I suppose from my viewpoint now, when I look at my staff, what we're confronted with, I would think that society's default position is, where do I complain and who do I blame? So that's causing a big issue for all regulatory industries, whether it be police, whether it be paramedics, whether it be fire, whether it be security guards, anyone that's employed to try and aid, serve and assist society. I know in my day I wouldn't back answer a policeman.
So if I asked you to provide security here for this podcast and yes. I have someone stand outside the door here and not let anyone in, and someone came to the door and said, I want to go in, you say, I'm sorry, you can't. And they say, well, I'm going in. You've probably answered this question. When can you use force as a security agent in your firm? When, if any time, are you allowed to carry a gun? And are your staff and agents under the law immune from legal action?
So the last question first. No, we're not immune from legal action at all.
But depending on what you... Does it depend on what you do?
We're not immune. Any member of the public...
Yes, of course.
You look at two policemen that have been charged with assault in Harry Warren recently. So let's just say that you've had a blow-up with Don and we've got a security guard here, and Don comes back in and Don says, I want to see Sam. And we say, no, Sam's not here, which would obviously say that you're not here if you're here or not. Don tries to force his way through. So Don then starts to commit an offence of willful trespass. So we have, under 458 of the Crimes Act, the ability to prevent Don from committing that offence.
By physically
stopping him and preventing him from entering through the door.
So this is like a nightclub. If someone bust their way through the rope, and they have the right to stand in your way and physically touch you.
Allowed to assault. So then come back to the use of force. And the best way to describe use of force is a bit like rock, paper, scissors. All right? So you're only allowed to use the force that is proportionate to the force being used against you. So if you slap me across the face, I effectively can slap you back or protect myself or hold you and restrain you. But I can't go and get a knife and stab you.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Okay. If an old lady is the subject to, let's just say she's 90 years of age, and these are all the relevant aspects to it. She's 90 years of age, she's alone in her home, she's infirmed, and a couple of young men or offenders burst into her home. If she pulls out a knife or hypothetically, she's got a shotgun.
Yeah, to defend herself.
A 90-year-old woman infirmed in a home is
self-defense.
Absolutely, totally in fear of the three men.
Or people
that have come into her home. She's got entitlement to use the force to protect herself.
Okay, so if someone is being antisocial behaviour in a nightclub, they're pissed and they're slagging off at men or women, or women doing it to men or men doing it to women or whatever, and the management says, hey, out the front there, you boys, security, come in and eject these people.
So they have a right because they're inside licensed premises.
So they have a right for large people, large security people who...
Any person.
I know, but want to be...
The appropriate person.
You want to be appropriately sized to actually be able to discharge your duty. So they have an absolute right to go and grab them, however, whatever strength or vigour they need to eject them. They can't be in fear of being sued or...
If they use force disproportionate to eject them, they can be in fear of being sued.
So it's
a fine line.
I suppose I'll give you an example that we did on the footy show that Croft did. And I think it was the young bloke Scully that had signed on it.
Melbourne?
No, Western Sydney, the Giants. He'd signed on there for an enormous amount of dollars in his contract. So Rob Corbell and the producers decided that we'd put Croft in a suit coat with photocopied $50 and $100 notes stapled to the suit.
Oh, I remember that, yep.
Right, so when I got the brief, I said to Rob, this is a big one. And I said, where are we going? And he said, Footscray. And we're going into the mall. Beautiful sunny day. Now, there's a lot of people in the mall in Footscray.
They were real notes, though?
No, they were photocopied.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, to the untrained eye at distance, and you're under the effects of...
Yeah, amphetamines.
Amphetamines or any other drug. Fair pickings. Easy target.
What do you mean?
Well, they thought they were real. I remember this, and they went to try and steal...
So they just running it...
Tried to steal him off his coat, thinking they were real money.
We had myself and three other of my men that were all experienced in looking after Sam, and we'd done it for many, many years. So we knew what we're up against relative to going to all of the different locations, whether it be Sunshine, whether it be St Albans, whether it be Footscray, whether it be Dandenong, whether it be Frankston. You know, go to Seymour. We went to Seymour one time, and we had an intervention there. So you can provoke yourself. You can bring it upon yourself, and we had a few interventions there. And the those that were affected by drugs honestly thought that these $50, $100 notes were real, and they thought there was an easy target, and they were trying to rush Crawf and trying to get the notes. So
yeah, I remember.
Well,
that.
You've just blown a real theory out of my, because I thought that was the best segment on the show, and I watch it on YouTube, Street Talk. Mm-hmm. And I thought you handled the crowd well, but you had someone behind you, had a security mob behind you.
Don. Well, it was from
we had.
You're doing a good job.
In Sam's defence.
Thank you.
To the environments that we went to.
Unbelievable.
We needed the security. Now, understand.
Well, I didn't think you did a good job because I didn't even see you, or there was no hint of security.
My briefing
at all.
To our staff. Is that
keep off out of the camera's is way? That,
Sam was a marquee identity for Channel 9. The Footy Show was a marquee program, and Street Talk was a marquee segment.
Yeah, exactly.
So, the responsibility to protect Sam as a marquee identity, and the ability and the ease for someone to knife Sam, assault Sam, whilst out in these environments. Was massive. So the level of alertness that we needed to maintain was extreme. And you know, the 2 to 3 hours that we're doing Street Talk, you know, we're doing our 360s all the time watching, because you know, you would go to Sunshine or St Albans and you had a multinational environment. That multinational, some of them, those immigrants and their cultures had no respect for security, let alone police, or police, let alone security. So, and they were affected by drugs, they were affected by alcohol. So I remember at one stage there were three large men from another country. And they were off their face. And they loved Sam. And I watched them like a hawk, to the extent, and Sam was in his zone, I was in my zone. These three approached and they loved him and they just wanted to put their arms around him, have a laugh and have a giggle. That was fine whilst they're up and they're happy. If something had happened to trigger them, they were three big men, massively big men, the size of a magic door. Nothing that any policeman could do, nothing that Don Scott could do, nothing that John Moncrief or my security decal could do, nothing that the Secret Service could do. They were three large men, and they could have taken Sam. Now, how do I explain back to Channel 9 that I'm in charge of security and I've allowed three large men get within the confines, similar to what Sam was with Sam before, when I'm meant to be protecting him? There's a very, very fine line.
Were you ever frightened or did you have any altercation when you were doing that?
No, that's a very good question, because I was going to say I used to speak to all the people that would come up to us, and they, as John says, they men and women, they'd love to grab you and grope you and hug you, and they would never know, the security people, whether I was never worried me, because I knew.
Yeah, but did you have any incidents that you were a little bit wary of, or incidents, no, in plural?
No, I never did. But I looked at people sometimes with scepticism and wondered where this was headed, and thought I might be able to talk and make it humorous. But I knew that these people were just around at the back. And you say, oh, you looked at Street Talk and thought, well, I did it all, Don, but those people were charged by Channel 9. They're charged with making sure that no one actually, to get their head on television, does something that is absolutely nefarious or against the law, or is physically threatening. And I would say, John will back this up, people would come over and blokes would grab me and I'd say, John would move in, I'd say, that's all right, mate, I wouldn't put that on. And I'd say to John, don't worry, let me handle this. I would, but they would be right there just in case I couldn't handle it.
Very fine line.
Is that fair
line.
Comment?
Very fine line. And you know, for every four people that would approach Sam, one would not like him, and they might be drug affected, they might be alcohol affected. So, and you were alert to that. But a lot of those people would be passing by and throwing comments, you know, like a tennis ball, so to speak, as they were passing by. But I suppose you come back to the one that Sam mentioned. You know, we were standing off and there was two elderly lady, and they were from either Greece or Italy, and massive Essendon supporters. And they had their old EF Falcon sedan parked at MCG right near the fence, the treated pine fence that they used to have there just before you went up the steps to Gate 6. And that's where we were, just near Brunton Avenue. They hadn't put their barbecue together properly. And before I was a policeman, I was a fireman. So I'd seen that this gas bottle, and I didn't see that it was leaking until she lit the actual barbecue. So, and Sam's doing his doorstop with this lady and having a conversation, and then the other lady has gone to light the barbecue. And as she's lit the barbecue, it's leaking. So So then I've got a 1 kilo, a 1.5 kilo gas bottle that's a straight jet of flame that's ignited, that's blown the hose off, it's fallen on its side, and it's gone straight into the engine bay of the car that they've parked.
Oh, shit.
So I've got a marquee identity on a marquee show on Anzac Day for Essendon Collingwood at the MCG, and so I've just reacted and grabbed hold of Sam and pulled him away and laid on top of him to protect him. And I'll never forget it. And Sam said, Johnny, what are you doing? And Rob Corbell and all the boys had it all on screen. And then if it didn't play out, it played out with James and Gary putting it on air and having a bit of a laugh and a giggle at it.
Now, listen,
but it was serious at the time.
Can we just change tact a little bit? Because Moncrief's an intriguing name. Now, there was an Alan Moncrief who played for Footscray, I think, in the 50s. I played with a Michael Moncrief, yep. And there was Gladys Moncrief. Now, it's an unusual... Are you related in any way, shape or form to any of those three?
So, I'm a distant cousin of Michael Moncrief.
A distant?
Yeah, so his father, Alan Moncrief, owned a jewellery store on the Nepean Highway and Gould Street, or it might have been Plain Street in Frankston, and my father was the senior sergeant of police at Frankston. And Michael was number 6 playing at full forward with you.
Yep. Had the worst physique of any footballer that ever played AFL football. He had a sunken chest, he had a pot gut, he never did anything
other than that, Don.
Or exercise. Mongoose was... he had an unbelievably good timing kicking for football, very, very talented, but geez, he never worked.
Well, I did, and he speaks highly of you, Don.
Well,
he says
you're
a brilliant and a pleasant man, and you know, just a pleasure.
What about Gladys Moncrief?
Joy to be with.
A distant great auntie, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, but Moncrief is a derivative from Scotland, and we come out of Perthshire, and our heritage, when we've gone back in our lineage, is that we were clergy, town planners, and police. Coming from Scotland, from Perthshire, and a Baron James Moncrief, and it's to my recollection with that we were, our heritage were the town planners for Perth.
Now, John, just to make this a bit spicy, if you can, without mentioning any names or whatever, what are some of the bigger fracas or incidents you've been involved in, looking after who or what company and under what circumstance? Just if you can give us something. This is a question without notice.
A big one was when I was doing Australian Idol, and obviously Australian Idol was a massive show back in the early 2000s, and to this date, I think outside of the Olympics and we're all weddings, it's one of the highest rating shows on Australian television, outside of Neighbours with Jason and Kylie getting married. So I was tasked out of Melbourne to work for Grundy's and Channel 10, who had the rights for Australian Idol.
For Bunnings, did you say?
No, Grundy's.
Grundy's. She said Bunnings. Yep.
And so I was flown into Sydney, and I was tasked to write a paper to obtain the rights to the Sydney Opera House, to be able to own the Sydney Opera House, all of it, the Opera Theatre, the Concert Hall, the Bennelong, all of the forecourt for Australian Idol. So if you go back and look at the footage, I think we had about 10,000 people on the front steps. We had an outdoor broadcast, and then we had 3,000 to 3,500 people on the inside. So one of the big protocols there was to protect all of the young talent, and you had talent from the age of 16 all the way through to 30, so to speak. And they were people, you know, effectively a Cinderella story. So we put in, myself as the head of security, working with the executive team, you know, we didn't want to be breached by rival channels and rival publications, whether it be New Idea, The Woman's Day, Today Tonight, A Current Affair, or anything else. So we hid the talent in homes dotted around Sydney. And Sydney's very good to do this because there's lots of little alcoves where you can get people into the homes discreetly via water. There's lots of little peninsulas where there's not a lot of shopping centres. So anyway, the Anthony Collier and Casey Donovan year was quite a large one because we didn't anticipate how big it would be with Shannon and Guy, and then we anticipated how big it would be for Anthony and Casey. So Anthony was winning the series. They were down to the last two. They were living in a major home that had 10 bedrooms in Hunters Point. Obviously, I'd worked with the New South Wales Police Department, and our detail there was about 150 security, 100 police to close down the Sydney Opera House for the last show, the grand final. And every year, we had the rights to close down the Opera House. We received a letter at the house, and this effectively was a safe house where no one knew that they were there. And this letter was a letter that was cut out of
newspapers and different magazines.
Like a Unibomber letter.
Yep.
So it was a letter threatening Anthony. So that escalated everything. So the circumstances were is that we escalated police, we escalated security, we escalated bag checks, we made sure everything was safe because, again, it was a high-rating television show. I was tasked to look after everything. Cut a long story short, the only thing that I didn't have control over was the doors of the Opera Theatre where we had all of the VIPs, 3,500 people, because the Sydney Opera House has its own fire warden policy. So those people were on the doors. And we didn't have control of the contestants via McDonald's that had won invitations to be there. So Anthony and Casey were quite nervous about it, and obviously we had to brief them. And they were in the charge and custody of Grundy Television and Channel 10, and then I was head of security and safety. So we come up the stairs of the Bennelong, we go in the back door. We think we're pretty safe. Everything's okay. And Andrew G and James Matheson are on the stage. We've got a full orchestra, 3,500 people. Peter Rotz is the director. I'm running a series of comms in my left ear for security and police and a series of comms in my right ear for production. And we come out of the ad break and Andrew G and James come back into it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Australian Idol. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Casey Donovan. Casey Donovan walks on. They have a bit of a vox pop with her, ladies and gentlemen, Anthony Kalea. Okay, Anthony walks on, a bit of a vox pop with him. The next thing from where Marsha, Dicko and Mark were sitting, up in a stall, which would be the height of the mezzanine level here, Sam, this thing jumps out. So I've got a threat against Anthony and Casey. I've got some other associates that are bodyguards, that are ex-police, that look after some high notable international movie stars, Australian movie stars, and they're off onto the other side of the stage. So this thing jumps out, and
thing,
a male person,
oh,
jumps out from beside Marsha, Dicko and Mark. So my operatives on the other side that are trained, we know we've got a threat against Anthony because we're all on heightened awareness. The police are aware, and obviously we're headshot, tight camera A and B from the rear of the concert hall on Anthony and Casey and James and Andrew. So no one else sees what's going on. So this male person's got a Ian Cornell strop surf, yep, life-saving hat, mm-hmm, a yellow surf life-saving T-shirt and a pair of red surf life-saving shorts and a pair of shoes. He jumps out. We're there. I jump on him, I drag him off stage, pull him off stage, police have come to assist me, my other security come, I roll him over and it's Peter Hoare, the serial pest.
Oh, yeah.
So
how does he, it's, yeah, go on.
So he gets in because he'd bought a McDonald's ticket of one of the contestant winners who had free pass to go. So that's how I got breached.
I'm glad you mentioned him. So he was a serial pest. How does he get away? How did he get away with all that stuff without being...
So a segue for you?
Locked
a
up.
A very good segue. So Foxtel come to me after Australian Idol and they say, look, we're doing a new show called Rockstar, Get Me Out of Here, which is the new... we're trying to find a lead singer to take over from Michael Hutchins for INXS. So we think that, you know, this show, this format will be as big as Australian Idol. Well, unfortunately, it wasn't. So we get to... We get to Sydney. We've done Melbourne, and there was about 20 people turned up to audition. Molly was one of the actors, one of the judges.
Yep.
And then we get to Brisbane. A little bit of a segue. If Brisbane, we get to Brisbane, we don't have a lot of people turn up. I go and get a ham and cheese sandwich from the kitchen, and the young chef says to me, "What's this show?" And I said, "Oh, mate, it's we're trying to find a new lead singer for INXS." And I said, "Can you play a guitar? Can you sing?" He said, "Yeah, I can." Anyway, for those that watched Australian Idol, I'm here doing a Foxtel show, Rockstar Get Me Out of Here, or whatever we called it, and this bloke was just filling up content. But it was Bobby, if you remember Bobby, that looked like Krusty the Clown out of The Simpsons. Well, he auditioned with Greg Burness, the executive producer of Australian Idol, who's obviously a mate that I worked very closely with at the time. He auditioned with Greg Burness, FaceTime on my phone, sitting beside the gully trap at the back of the Tivoli Theatre in Brisbane, and he went on to come number 5 in that series of Australian Idol. Cut forward, we go to Sydney, and we get to Sydney, and we're at the Metro Theatre, and we're on George Street, and I've got a couple of security guards that are from the Metro Theatre. We've got about 20 people that are lined up. It starts raining, we're near Chinatown, and I'm pretty alert in the mornings and pretty alert at the best of times. So when I was doing Idol, I would always hand out every application form because I wanted to make eye contact with every person that was going to go through, because we had a lot of people that were drug affected, the mentally affected, suicidal, you know, they had delusions of grandeur, they thought there was going to be their Cinderella moment, et cetera, et cetera. So you had to be very alert of the people we're putting through that we're going to be sitting with, Marsha, Dicko, Mark, the other producers and all of the staff. So it was, you know, an onerous circumstance. Anyway, so I go and hand out to the third person down this little alley beside the Metro Theatre at and George Street. And here's this man dressed in a Molly Meldrum cowboy hat, big frizzy hair, Dame Edna Everage glasses, a John Wayne cowboy vest and a flannel shirt and a big pair of red pantaloons and Ronald McDonald shoes. And I hand out his sister. He said, "Oh, you're John Moncrief." And I'm in a laneway at 5:30 in Sydney, near Chinatown, doing a reality-based television show, and I'm one up by myself with a couple of security guards on the door, and I go, "How does this bloke know me?" And so I step back, and he said, "Mate, no, you're okay. Things are fine." And I said, mate, what do you mean? He said, I know you. He said, you're good. You're the only bloke that stopped me. And I said, what do you mean I'm the only bloke that stopped you? He took down his glasses. It was Peter Hoare again.
Again. So, it's amazing.
Amazing. So we, I took advantage then, and to not to justify Peter Hoare, but my knowledge, I sat down, had a cup of coffee with him. He actually auditioned. And he, to my knowledge, was a civil engineer. To my knowledge, he suffered bipolar and had a pretty severe marriage breakup. And he didn't like corruption.
What about, okay, what about some of the guys you employ? How well do you screen them? Because some of the, well, I shouldn't say your company, but there are some nuff-nuffs out there posing as security officers.
It's very, very hard. It's very, very hard. If you're, if you look at how desperate other agencies are, whether it be the fire brigade, whether it be the police force, whether it be the ambulance, you know, we just don't have the personnel to choose from anymore.
So what are you employing nuff-nuffs?
No, I'm not employing nuff-nuffs. I'm very cautious about who we employ.
What's your workforce? How many?
We got about 350 on market, on trade at the moment, on staff. And it's very, very, very hard. You know, again, I'll go back to, if you want the canary in the coal mine, the canary in the coal mine is the Victoria Police going back to 40,000 people to try and find recruits.
So with the lack of authority that people are allowed to in all security and the police, what's the level of, is the level of crime and antisocial behaviour increased, I think is the word, exponentially over the years, or has it always been bad but no, it wasn't as much publicity?
I think the stats are showing that it is. I think it's quite obvious. So, you know, like, if you look at the guests that come through your door and you look at the people that you associate with, and, you know, it's common knowledge that Rebecca Judd has said what she said in relation to crime. You know, I think Anthony Bogart's come out and said the same thing in Bayside. You know, the crime is up from what the metrics are saying. I have an opinion on that. I'm probably not here for the podcast, but... From my viewpoint.
Well, this is it, Don. Go ahead, Don.
Now, give me something. I'll give you one that I want to hear from you. Give me a positive where security has been introduced and the situation has improved.
I can only speak from our environment. And one of the things that we, and it's a very, very, very small part of our business, extremely small part of our business, but the peace of mind that we give to a family that are having a party and we have the right staff there and we've put the right systems and the right processes in place, the notifications of police, not allowing pass outs from anyone that goes into the party. Because what happens with the pass outs, they go out, and if you're regulating the drink and you're watching what they're doing as far as what they're putting up their nose or down their mouth, and you create an environment where it's very hard for them to do that, well, then they'll go to an environment where they can do that, and that generally is outside of the precinct of where they're actually having the party. So we make it an absolute mandate that we will only supply security if there are no pass outs. We've got control of the guest list. And we've notified the police of what the parties are on.
Well, the one I don't know who I compliment, but Victorian Railways. Since, you know, security, you see them get... I do travel by train on occasion. They'll jump
graffiti.
On...
Graffiti.
PSOs.
No, not graffiti. The but PSOs. They'll jump on... What are they called?
The Protective Service Officers.
Are they private or government?
They're government. They're part of the Victorian
Police Force. They do a terrific job.
They do a great job.
And they've really cleaned up the railway lines.
I've got a friend of mine who runs the Transit Division, a policeman. He's a very, very good officer, and he's got a good morale there and a very good system.
Yeah, now, John.
Excellent.
John,
yes,
Moncrief from,
yes,
Monjon. Fascinating. I don't think you could find someone who could give you more detail, facts, names, dates, and an answer to any question. He is extraordinary. He's like a human encyclopedia.
Similar,
you ask him
yourself
a question about what happened, and he'll mention 50 names, 32 dates, a street name, a street place. He's got an encyclopedic brain, Don, unlike you, who hasn't got one.
It's
not
very
a function.
You two would be at loggerheads.
Yeah, no, not at all. So, John, thank you very much. Most interesting, all that
My
stuff.
Word.
And thank you very much for coming on to You Cannot Be Serious, John Moncrief from Monjon Security.
Thank you.